Seeking mental health care can be overwhelming and even scary, but it doesn't have to be. I'm Dr. Josephine McNary, and I'm committed to making this process easier for you. Each week, my expert guest and I unravel a different form of therapeutic intervention in order to bring comfort and understanding and to help you get back to your true self. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mind Stories. Today, I'm honored to have Jeanette Corcuera as our guest. Jeanette is a trained mindfulness facilitator through the UCLA Mindful Awareness Research Center. She has completed programs and classes through the UCLA Mindful Awareness Research Center, or MARC, including their Intensive Practice Program and Training in Mindfulness Facilitation Program. She's also completed an 8-week MBSR program through Inside LA and a community counselor training program through the Southern California Counselor Training Center in LA. She has written mindfulness curriculum targeted to parents and has led drop-in meditation classes at UCLA and in Mid-City Los Angeles. Welcome, Jeanette. This is Josephine McNary, and I'm here with Jeanette Corcuera, who is a mindfulness expert. She is a mindfulness facilitator trained through the UCLA Mindful Awareness Research Center. So welcome. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
So I think the first question that I think is the most kind of the most basic and important question is, could you just define what mindfulness is to you?
Yeah. There are a lot of interpretations on the website. There is no official statement of what mindfulness is, but it goes along the lines of it's the self-awareness and willingness to be with what is right now without judgment, criticism, or planning. So in other words, what's going on right now and just what's my body doing? What are the sounds that I'm hearing? What are the smells? How does my body feel? Am I angry, upset, or at peace? So that's the purpose of mindfulness, is so that you recognize what's going on in that very moment without any other distractions.
So why would someone be interested in that? Or maybe why? What got you interested in it?
Well, first of all, I think generally answering the general question is that people might want to be into it because they feel a sense of, I mean, how many times have you driven, say, your kids to school and like, wait, how did I get here? You leave your house and your conversation, your mind's racing towards the next appointment, but yet you're in the car driving. And next thing you know, 20, 30 minutes have passed, you're dropping your kids off at school and you don't know how you got there. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens to us with when we're, you know, our daily lives. And imagine living your life like that every single day. So you want to have a sense of, wait, I need to reconnect with what's really going on in my life because my life is chaotic. There's a lot of anxiety that I'm feeling with all the things I have to do in my day. My kids need my attention and I never have any quiet time. Or if you're at work with all these deadlines and pressures. So there's a lot of reasons why people would want mindfulness in their lives. And that's not so much to slow that part down, but enjoy life more. And it's been stated in many research studies that mindfulness with regular practice brings people not only more calm in their lives, but enables them to enjoy their lives better. Mm-hmm. That way the enjoyment comes from being present and understanding what's going on.
So this idea of kind of just getting back to your core, mm-hmm. maybe, and instead of kind of, yes, you have to deal with all these things in your life, but this idea of like, but what is kind of, what are you at your root?
Right.
And just grounding yourself.
Grounding yourself, exactly.
And that in itself kind of helps you rejuvenate, mm-hmm. maybe, or feel energized, mm-hmm. because you're not so focused on everything else going on around you.
Exactly. Okay. And there have been many times when, you know, people ask me this question all the time. Like, why would I do mindfulness? I don't have time for that. I don't have time to sit. I don't have time to meditate. I don't have time to exercise. I don't have time, et cetera, fill in the blank. And it's for that reason exactly why I would recommend mindfulness for people, is because then you get rid of those I should have, would have, could haves. And you start, mind starts going down that direction, you start feeling guilty that you didn't do enough of something, or that you didn't give your kids enough attention and whatnot. So that's a general answer. There are many other reasons that I could probably spend the next few hours talking about, but I think generally speaking, that's one answer. And for me personally, I did it because there was I was that person. I am that person still to this day. Too much on my plate, not enough slowing down, not enough me time. And when I get to a point where I've just had it, usually at the end of the day, I am beyond stressed and I'm not feeling myself. I feel angry and bitter and irritable, but nothing, not one thing triggered it. It's a series of things. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in the evenings is when my daughter's home from dance practice or from school and she's doing homework, and it's when she needs me the most. And if I'm feeling all this at the end of my day and she's feeling it, it's not going to be a very productive quality time together. And I noticed that when I was working, I'm not working right now, working corporate life, which I did for 25 years in corporate marketing, I felt a lot of stress 24/7. I couldn't sleep. I gained a lot of weight. And I wasn't available much to my daughter, who's 12. And I needed to do something about it because it was starting to cause some friction in our relationship between she and I. And every time she'd do something that would annoy me, I'd elevate it because I hadn't slept enough. Mm-hmm. And so I discovered the Mindful Awareness Research Center at UCLA and started taking some of their classes and fell in love with how it was affecting and impacting my life positively. And I immersed myself in meditation and I ended up completing the training in mindfulness program TMF through them. I just finished in December. And what I am seeing now is that in situations like mine in particular, with so much anxiety in my family and then a tense relationship between my daughter and I, I'm in a better place with her. I'm able to catch myself being angry before I get there. And that is really one of the key benefits also of mindfulness, is to be more responsive rather than reactive. And if you take away nothing from our interview, take that away, because how many times do you react in a day versus respond?
Can you talk more about that? Because I think that's the most important point. I mean, can you expand upon that?
Yeah. So again, taking the example of my relationship with my daughter. So she comes home, and if I calculate how much time she has at home after all of her activities of the day, including school, she's home for about an hour and a half before she has to wind down and get ready for bed. So in that hour and a half, we have dinner, we have homework, we have bath time or shower, we have getting ready for bed, and then somewhere in there, she has to do her homework. And I felt like I was doing things side by side next to her. In other words, I was making dinner, cleaning up, et cetera, while she was doing her homework. And sometimes we'd be sitting together and doing homework, maybe for no more than 30 minutes, because that's all the time I had. And if she would understand something, her emotions started escalating. She'd start getting irritable, and I'd get irritable because it's the end of my day, as I described earlier. And so she'd say something, and then I'm like, you know what, just do this by yourself because I can't handle this. So that's a reactive way. You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of maybe not too exaggerated, but an example of how I would react to something that really doesn't deserve that kind of reaction. And now what I do, and I'll give you an example. The other night she was here. She was in the bathroom actually getting ready for a bath. She likes to take baths. So I was upstairs doing my thing again while she was downstairs doing her thing. And I actually caught myself. I'm like, wait a second. It's almost at bedtime and I haven't spent any quality time with her. So I stopped what I was doing and I walked downstairs and I knocked on the bathroom door and I said, honey, I said, would you like me to, you know, help you with your bath? You know, like, she's 12, but sometimes, you know, there's this need on my part in particular to, you know, kind of still treat her that like that little child that she is. And interesting enough, she invited me in and she said, yeah, you know, maybe wash my back. And then she looked at me kind of weird, like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm just trying to spend some quality time with you before you go to bed. And she goes, okay. And so instead of me nagging her to get out of the bath because she takes forever, I joined her in a way that was very meaningful to the two of us. And I know she's going to remember that.
Right.
And so that's kind of a drawn out way to explain responsiveness versus reaction, because I actually thought about being with her and spending that time with her versus trying to do something of my own while she was doing something that she needed to do.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like the responsiveness is based in anxiety, mm-hmm. and feeling that you have tasks that you need to do, mm-hmm. or reactiveness is based, right. But responsiveness is kind of taking this idea of kind of who is important in my life and how do I want to be present with them, mm-hmm. instead of making my anxiety kind of dictate, you know, how I interact with that person.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think even people without children, you know, anybody who's important to them in their lives or just to themselves, mm-hmm. right? It's kind of about your relationship with yourself, mm-hmm. saying, okay, I have all these things. I'm so focused on all these things going on in my world. And just by taking a breath, like mm-hmm. you kind of give yourself that attention, just kind mm-hmm. of like you're saying, you give your daughter that attention.
Right.
Huh.
There's, and outside of parenthood, there are many examples also of reaction versus responsiveness. I mean, road rage is reaction. Mm-hmm. You know? Right. What good does that do you to get angry behind the car that somebody cut you off? Is it personal? No. Did it make you angry because they did it intentionally, or at least your mind told you they did it intentionally? Well, what if they did? So what? Is it going to get you there faster? No. Is it going to cause an accident if you react? Yeah. Probably. The chances are pretty high. Or there was another situation one time when I was at the gym, and there was this girl that she had her locker right next to me. And, you know, you kind of get that sensation when somebody's standing next to you, you need to move. So, you know, we're polite, we're courteous, we move without talking to each other. And this one particular girl, she just kind of cut me off, went to her locker. And I thought, wow, that was kind of rude. And then I started processing these things in my head. I'm like, what the hell is she being so, you know, angry about? Why is she so? And I caught myself, again, because of my practice, I caught myself thinking that. I'm like, oh, you're creating stories. Stop. And so I let it go. 2 minutes later, she came up to ask me something. I don't remember what it was about, but she asked me, let's just say she asked me something about a class and about a teacher in the class at the gym. And I explained it to her. She goes, oh my gosh, thank you so much. She goes, I was just thinking about this. She goes, that this class, I kind of hurt myself, but I was thinking maybe I should try this other thing. And she goes, that was very helpful. Thank you. And that proved to me like, that was not about me. Mm-hmm. She was thinking about, you know, maybe something that was going on in her body that she felt pain and she wanted to try something different. And that's when I catch myself in situations like that and I get reinforced by the person that, hey, you know what? They didn't mean to do that. It was something that I made up in my own head. That's when you know that you're aware of being responsive rather than reactive.
Right. Mm-hmm. Huh. So it's a way to catch, you know, kind of impulsive thoughts that, mm-hmm. you know, could be destructive mm-hmm. to you, and probably a major way of just helping someone maintain their anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I mean, I see a lot of people with anxiety, a lot of people with depression. It seems, I mean, mindfulness is very helpful to many people, mm-hmm. Or just even if you don't have anxiety or depression, this idea of just, I want deeper, more meaningful relationships with people who are important to me.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, there is a lot of mindfulness used in treatments and depression and psychiatric treatments and therapies. That's not my specialty because I don't have that background. But I definitely can work in complement with somebody that has that background because there's a lot of education that's happened specifically through UCLA's MARC program. We learn about trauma, we learn about depression, we learn about to observe the room, mm-hmm. of who is your audience. When I'm conducting a class, for example, like I try to understand in the few seconds that I have in the beginning of class, who's in my class. And if I see any clues of trauma, then I know that the chances of doing a body scan meditation, for example, are probably not a good one. And I have to really switch to something else because it's been proven that certain trauma patients cannot do body scans because it traumatizes them.
Can you talk a little bit about what a body scan is?
Yes. So a body scan is something you can do at any minute of the day, at any moment of the day. I do it in the morning, actually, when I wake up. And you start scanning your different body parts. some people have a dialogue with their body and say, hello, good morning, eyes, good morning, hand. That's, you know, that's not for everybody, but you can just sit there and start, close your eyes. Maybe even before you get out of bed in the morning is a good time to do it. And before you jump out of bed, just see how you feel. Lay on your back or sit up straight and just focus on the different parts of your body in sequential order. So either from top to bottom, head to toes, or toes to head. And just start focusing on your head. How does it feel? Go down and follow your eyes. And I can do it with you right now if you want for 30 seconds. Okay. So put your feet on the ground and your hands where they're not, where they're relaxed, like on your lap, not crossed. And then put your shoulders back and you don't have to be too stiff, but just definitely be relaxed, but not hunched over. And then keep your head up and close your eyes if that's comfortable for you. And then start just taking a breath or two very slowly. Now we're going to start at the top of our heads and just start thinking about the top of your head and just scan the top of your head down to your ears and your face. Make sure your jaw is not clenched. Relax. Maybe your tongue is at the roof of your mouth. And then scan down your neck. Loosen up any tension that you might feel in your neck. And then down to your shoulders. Is there tension in your shoulders? Just let it go and relax. Then your upper back. Just relax your shoulders, your upper back, down your arms, your elbows, out your hands, or your fingers, just loose, laying on top of your lap if that's where they are. And then keep going down your back, lower back, your pelvic area. And hold your stomach up, but don't tighten it. And then down your hips, through your upper legs, down your lower legs, down to your ankles, your feet, they flat on the ground, your toes relaxed. And just sit in this posture for a couple more breaths. And you can let it all go. And we're done. That's it.
You forget about the parts of, you forget that there are parts of your body in the world, right?
Yes.
And it's this idea that you're like, oh, I didn't remember what my toes feel like, mm-hmm. right? Or just, you know, it's this, and it's kind of a great exercise, right? Because yeah. you're more than just the world swirling around you. It's you and the world in your space, mm-hmm. right? And you forget about that.
Exactly. And that's, I do a body scan meditation when I can't focus. Like, I mean, I do have a daily practice, and sometimes I'm just not feeling it. Maybe I'm anxious or something's going on and the anxiety is overpowering what I want to achieve that day. And it's just sitting. And so I'll sit with that anxiety. I'll let it happen. I won't judge it or let it go. I just feel it in my body. And that's when I connect back to my body. So I'll do a body scan to see if I feel it somewhere else. Is it being triggered in a certain area of my body? Sometimes my anxiety is in my chest. Sometimes it's in my head and sometimes it's in my belly. But it's really interesting that with practice, I can actually recognize where it's sitting. And sometimes I can, sometimes it's gone away completely because I've just been able to just be with it. Just, okay, anxiety is sitting in my belly right now. Let's just see where it goes. Just approach it with curiosity. That's also a key word when you're meditating, is approach everything that comes up with curiosity. don't judge it. It's the opposite of judgment. It's just being with it and being, oh, why is this feeling like this? Why is that? Why am I feeling all this tightness in my chest? Oh, sometimes also with a lot of practice, and this has happened for me too, is when I'm eating, I often pause to make sure that what I'm eating is what my body likes. And that's come with practice, identifying, okay, you know, I can't really have that right now because it's going to bloat me. Or I one time had a bowl of lentil soup. I couldn't wait to eat it. And it just did not sit well with me all day long. And I recognized that, oh, it was the lentils that upset me. And I don't eat lentils anymore. But before, I used to just gobble them up, lunchtime, move on to the next meeting, or, you know. So mindful eating is a whole different conversation that we should do some other time.
Right. Yeah. Imagine. Mm-hmm. Maybe going back, I mean, I made you go off track in terms of maybe, I know it's a long explanation, but why someone with a history of trauma might have a hard time with a body scan.
Okay. So people that you don't know what their trauma is, first of all. So we have to be, aware of that trauma might be, you know, physical abuse, some kind of physical contact by someone that's unwanted and that has caused trauma in somebody's life. It could be that somebody experienced a major injury in their lifetime, maybe a car accident or something happened. And we, as I just described the body scan, our bodies absorb a lot of our emotions and it's housed somewhere in the body. This is not woo-woo stuff. It's proven, scientifically proven stuff. I mean, look at any of the research done through, you know, Harvard or UCLA or any of the number of schools that study mindfulness and impact on the body. And trauma, because it's housed in the body without it being addressed, can really get triggered if you do a body scan, for example. And a lot of trauma is held in the stomach and in the chest. Not so much in the head. And when you focus on a body scan, you start focusing on your stomach, it just, oh no, it's just a really uncomfortable. And imagine if someone who has been physically abused, whether sexual or otherwise, you tell them to focus on that part that causes so much pain for them. They couldn't do it.
So you have to be really conscientious of who should or shouldn't focus on body scans.
Yeah. Yeah. So usually when I start a meditation in a class, even closing your eyes can cause trauma. So we address it by saying, you know, if it's comfortable for you, close your eyes. If not, we tell you to focus a few feet in front of you. So you don't have to go through that. So there's ways around it. And as like I said, I just only have scratched the surface with what I've learned at UCLA through the TMF program, but I'm not a trauma specialist, and that's not the audience I want to work with because I don't want to hurt anybody.
Right. The other thing, I have so many questions about mindfulness and we're not going to get to all of them, but I know at UCLA, part of the curriculum of the MARC programs, they do have, I remember they have a day that they talk about mindfulness for anxiety. Mm-hmm. So are there, I'm assuming you teach people how to do, you know, the body scan and you teach them other meditation techniques, or is there anything specific to anxiety that they kind of teach in that curriculum?
Well, that's kind of a big question.
Yeah.
It has a big answer, but, I will keep it brief. With respect to anxiety, anxiety is one of those emotions that we feel on a daily basis. There's also sadness, there's anger. And what mindfulness teaches you is to catch those emotions, sometimes while they're happening and even sometimes before they happen. And catching it before is practice. And it's practice and practice and practice because I honestly don't catch it all the time. Sometimes I catch it when it's done. Mm-hmm. And so if you practice mindfulness or meditation, mindfulness, first of all, is the awareness of being in the present. The meditation is the actual sit, the actual sitting quiet and calmly. So for example, if you have a situation where you're starting to get triggered by something or someone, or something's happening and you're starting to feel anxiety come into your body, you're not aware of it necessarily that it's there, but you're irritated and you're anxious. Now, if you had mindfulness or meditation as a regular practice, you're going to catch yourself, oh, anxiety is arising in me right now. But you only do that when you just take a breath or two and just, what is it that you're feeling? And the reason why you want to recognize what you're feeling is so that you can calm yourself down, or you can just be with it without judging it. Because what's the first thing we do? We're so self-critical in this day and age about everything. We didn't do something right. There's regret. There's nothing you can do about the past. There's nothing you can do about the future. So why worry about it? It's a big statement, I know, because it's hard to practice being in the present all the time. But imagine if you were, like this morning, I had a really hard time getting my daughter out to the car. Just things weren't going as planned. And we were pushing the time when we really had to go because we were in a carpool and, you know, we're going to hold other people up. And my first instinct is the same instinct I have every day. And that is rush her, stand by her and push her and say, it's now this time. And then, and while I'm doing that, I get worked up and I get really angry. And then she gets angry. And yeah, we may or may not get out the door on time with my pushing her, but we get out the door just so angry at each other. And I was escalating. I felt myself getting anxious and irritated and angry at her that she was pushing the limits of the time she needs. She's also almost a teenager, so that's part of it too. And I cannot blow up every time this happens. So I chose, because I felt anxiety coming up into my body. I felt a tightness in my chest and a heaviness. And because I caught myself, I walked away. I didn't get into conflict with her. I just peeked in on her and just said, it's whatever time it was, 7:10. Yeah, 5 minutes left, came back. It's 7:15, I'll meet you in the car, came back. I sat in the car for 5 minutes waiting for her, and I almost called the other parent and said, you know what, I'm just gonna drive her by myself because I thought we were gonna be that late. And lo and behold, out of the corner of my eye, I see her coming. Had I been angry and blown up like I do every time that happens, I would have probably caused an accident. I would have been yelling at her in the car on the way there. I would have had all these horrible things coming up because I was anxious about meeting this timeline that we were on. But none of that happened. Yeah, I was still a little angry. It doesn't mean I was calm and smooth and good with it all. I wasn't. She still pushed the envelope and I was still angry at her, but I didn't blow up at her. So we sat in the car. It was quiet because that's my way to react when I'm in such close space with her. And we still made it on time. And without all that extra emotional anxiety that was brought along with it, and it proved to me that she is aware of her time. And I don't need to, yeah, I can push her, but I don't need to add all that extra layer of anxiety on top of it.
Right. It's kind of this living by a philosophy, but having tools that you can use mm-hmm. when you feel like it's hard to really live by that philosophy, yes. Right? So yeah. It's the breathing. It's, you know, it's whatever tool works for you mm-hmm. in order to allow yourself to not get consumed by those kind of negative emotions that you know are detrimental.
Exactly. And it's hard to practice mindfulness all day long. Trust me, I know. But I have reminders. There's actually, and I'm not here plugging any specific business, but I have a mindfulness bell that goes off every hour. And when it goes off, I stop what I'm doing and I'm present for like 2 or 3 breaths. And then I keep going. And that just has helped me so much in getting a regular mindfulness practice in. And I've referred that. It's through the Plum Village app. Plum Village.
It's kind of for people who are listening who mm-hmm. don't necessarily have their own personal mindfulness mm-hmm. coach or can't go to a class at mm-hmm. UCLA or mm-hmm. another, you know, mindfulness-based center. I mean, what are easy things that people can download or, you know?
Well, first of all, yeah, there's quite a few and most of them are free. I mean, yeah, you can go through Calm or Headspace, which charges you a subscription fee, but even though their free mode of that is helpful. But if you want to explore other options, there's the UCLA Mindful app. They just launched theirs last year and they have meditations on there that range anywhere from 5 minutes to 30 minutes. There's just resources there. And I use that one too. Another one is Insight Timer. And that one's completely free. And it's not a social app, but it's all these different teachers from around the world that post their meditations. And there's different kinds of meditation. I mean, I can't, hundreds of different options and different times available. Again, 5 minutes, 3 minutes, all the way up to an hour, hour and a half. And there's also talks on that app. And they do have a subscription service, but that's mostly for their online classes. But it's free. And I use that one too. If you don't want to listen to the meditations, that same app also has a bell. Mm-hmm. But that's for you to check your time. So if you want to sit and meditate, you can put a set a timer on and it'll ring a bell for you. And the one I just mentioned is Plum Village, which is, if you know anything about Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist monk who has, well, just look him up. He's a phenomenal person.
How do you spell his name?
I think it's Thichnahan.
Okay.
There's something like that. It'll come up.
It'll show up.
It'll show up. I mean, he's world famous. He was actually nominated by Martin Luther King for Nobel Peace Prize back in the 70s. So he's pretty big. But he started all these monasteries around the world to bring mindfulness. The emphasis of their practice is actually mindfulness, so that you're mindful, mindful eating, mindful conversations, mindful listening, et cetera, et cetera. So they launched this app called Plum Village, and there's talks on there, and it is a Buddhist in term, but it's not religious. It's available to, it's accessible to everybody.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. So two things that I want to talk about before we have to wrap up. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about mindfulness, and it really kind of caught on, you know, in kind of the general public, maybe like 20 years ago with Jon Kabat-Zinn, or maybe even longer. And I was just thinking about the first studies that they did on mindfulness was at the University of Massachusetts in terms of chronic pain and work with mindfulness. And they found that patients who had a meditation practice or a mindfulness practice actually required less pain medication. And I think that was kind of the first, you know, mindfulness research that really got people interested in the fact that, there's really something to this. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about when you were talking about being in the car, waiting for your daughter, kind of, okay, you have tools that you can use, or you can just say like, okay, I need to be mindful in this situation. As a psychiatrist, you know, what I usually do is, you know, give people a pill to help them calm down if they need it. So, you know, a common one is something like Xanax. And then if they're feeling anxious, I could see that someone in the same situation with their daughter who feels kind of anxious, maybe if they're not going to be driving, like take a Xanax in that moment.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what a mindfulness practice is. It's like, how can you de-escalate yourself knowing that you feel that anxiety or discomfort coming on? And so I guess we can talk a little bit more about that. But I was also just thinking, I have a lot of people in my practice who are, you know, started to see me with a lot of anxiety, depression. Yes, we started them on medication, but they also tried to, you know, add in mindfulness into their lives. And a lot of times they really require less medication because it kind of does the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, that would be anybody's choice to be on less or no medication. And this is kind of a more lasting way to really be able to accomplish that. Well, we probably do need to wrap up. So maybe it's a good way to wrap up is to talk a little bit about community.
Okay. So mindfulness class, you can do a mindfulness meditation on your own, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. And if that's all that you can afford time-wise, it's better than nothing. I highly recommend, at least if you cannot do, I mean, people hear 30 minutes, 45 minutes. No, you don't have to have that kind of time or make that kind of time. You can do it in 2-3 minutes to start. And then as you start getting used to it, maybe start building that up, you know, at your own pace, but do it. Do a meditation, being present for at least 5 minutes a day. Highly recommended. Community is important because that's what's keeping you within, inspiring you to keep the practice going. You also learn different types of meditation practices. You learn from other people's experiences. If you connect with your community, because you can move around to one community to the next, whether the community is a class or you actually find a sitting group, which are available all over Los Angeles and probably any major city. and most of them are free, so that you can practice together. There's a different sense of energy when you're practicing together. You build a rapport, whether you build friendships or not, that's besides the point, but you build this amazing rapport. And if you happen to connect with certain people in your group, then you start checking in on each other to see if you're practicing. And it's just a great way to build and enhance your practice.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and talking. Yeah. I learned a lot about meditation and mindfulness, and it makes me think that I got to get moving on this.
Good. I'm glad.
Easier said than done. Yeah. But I think it's, if you understand the importance of it, mm-hmm. you'd be more motivated to actually take the time, because the results are real.
Yeah. The results are real.
Yeah.
All the research is out there.
Well, we really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye.
This has been Mind Stories. With remote appointments in California and offices in downtown Los Angeles, Santa Monica, Hermosa Beach, Marina Del Rey, and Echo Park, Cal Psychiatry specializes in medication management, mood and anxiety disorders, alternative therapies, women's mental health, and more to help you get back to your true self. Visit us at calpsychiatry.com. Thank you for listening to Mind Stories, and don't forget to subscribe.